This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Right now, though, let's talk some dogs.
Dukes and Bell on the sidelines with the dogs.
All right, Connor. Connor Riley from Dog Nation. Red team, black team. What do we know about this quarterback situation? Mike and I were discussing before you came on, do we have a definitive starter going into next season?
Kirby hasn't come out and said as much, but the more you hear, and certainly with what we saw on Saturday, Gunnar Stockton is comfortably ahead of Ryan Puglisi. I thought Gunnar got better as the day progressed. Look, anyone that's watched these spring games knows that it's not exactly always the most offensive-friendly situation, especially with Kirby Smart. He wants to make things difficult. I think Gunnar Stockton was a very good deep ball. I would say better than Carson Beck in that regard. And the area where Gunnar has to improve is just playing a little bit faster, and that's always going to be hard to do coming out of G-Day. But I thought Gunnar looked better than he did in the Notre Dame game, and Gunnar looked better against Notre Dame than he did against Texas. And I think he continues to show why he's going to be Georgia's starting quarterback. I thought Ryan Puglisi had some nice moments on Saturday, but he was much more streaky over the course of the day. Again, he looked like a player who was in his first G-Day performance. So Kirby Smart hasn't come out and said it. I would expect them to look for a very specific type of player in the transfer portal if they come available. But after everything we saw this spring and coming out of G-Day, I still very much expect Gunnar Stockton to be Georgia's starting quarterback when they next take Sanford Stadium on August 30th against Marshall.
I know that one of the things that Kirby talked about, like it can happen anywhere, but to worry about somebody coming out of your spring game with an injury. And what can you talk about Noah Thomas and the knee?
Yeah, so Noah Thomas sprain, AC sprain, which is in your shoulder, happened early on there in the game for Georgia. The good news is, you know, of the injuries that they suffered over the weekend, none of them appear to be too serious. And so I think most of all, coming out of a spring game, how healthy are you is the most important thing to look for. So in that regard, Georgia's good moving forward. It doesn't seem like anyone is going to have an injury that lingers into fall camp. And so while they were missing a few starters on the defensive side of the ball, Dalen Everett, Kristen Miller, getting this team fully healthy, as we saw last season, I think is so important, just given this new age in college football where you're just relying on a lot more unproven entities. And so if you can get your known guys to be fully healthy, ready to go this fall, that's massive.
I know you can't hit the quarterbacks in this game, this G-Day scrimmage, but what were the reports of the D-line and the pressures or getting after the quarterback, what would have been assumed as sacks?
Yeah, so I liked what I saw from the defensive line. I thought Joseph Jonah Janye had some nice moments. He had a nice pass rush win move on Joe Jackson there when he was working with the first team. Jordan Hall looked really good as he continues to recover from injury and get back to 100%. I mentioned they're missing Kristen Miller there. Elijah Griffin had some nice moments. You do worry about that outside linebacker position, especially with Quintavious Johnson going down with an ankle injury. They're really thin there. Even if they're able to get a good guy via the transfer portal, I think that's their number one need this spring at that position. It's just not going to be a position of strength for Georgia. And if Georgia's going to create pressure, create sacks, I think it's going to come from the inside linebacker position, where it's probably Georgia's best position on the team. You have veterans in C.J. Allen and Raylan Wilson who know what to do. And then you have two really, really promising sophomores in Chris Cole and Justin Williams. I don't know if they're going to quite pass Allen or Wilson in terms of snaps on the depth chart, but Williams and Cole were five-star players, and they absolutely looked the part on Saturday. And coming out of that, I think you're really, really encouraged about what the ceiling for this Georgia defense could be. I don't know how quickly they're going to get it and get there, but this has a high ceiling defense, if not maybe potentially a consistent one as well.
And there were a lot of injuries too, right? We didn't get to see all the defensive pieces in this scrimmage.
Yeah, you know, you're missing Dalen Everett, who's going to be one of your starting cornerbacks, and I think one of the better ones in college football next year. Kristen Miller is your most veteran defensive lineman. Gabe Harris, an outside linebacker, is someone who I think they're counting on to play an important role for them. So this defense, you know, it was not the complete defense we're going to see early next season when Georgia goes to Tennessee in September and then hosts Alabama at the end of that month. But seeing all that, knowing all that, there are the pieces here, I think, to be a great defense. I wonder how quickly everything will come together. It's not going to be like the 2021 defense where you knew from that Clemson game on that this was a special unit. But I think as the season progresses, if they're able to stay healthy, there's enough high upside guys on this defense to where it can be a very, very good unit.
All right, let's talk about the real. Mm-hmm. Can these guys catch the rock, and are we getting yak after the catch? Dylan Bell, Kobe Young, tell me who stood out and what did you think about the wide receiving group?
It's a night and day difference with this group in terms of talent this year. And there were still some drops on Saturday. Cole Spear, freshman Talon Taylor had one. And I believe that like drops are at this point just like a mental thing, and that's something that they do have to figure out and they do have to get solved. But I'm really, really encouraged by what I saw from this wide receiver room. Dylan Bell did a lot of different things for Georgia, and I know last year you heard a lot about him and how hyped up he was. He was asked to do something he's not comfortable with and be sort of that big-bodied outside receiver, and that's just not, I think, what his game is. His best ability is to move around the formation and use him in a variety of different roles, either as a running back or as a wide receiver. Lennon Humphreys had another very strong showing, which I think is encouraging as he's in his second year in the program. And then you have a big guy like Kobe Young. You have a big guy like Noah Thomas. They put them out there the first play of the game with the two tight end set with Lawson Lucky and Oscar Delp. And you're blown away by how much size this team potentially has there. And Kobe Young looked fantastic in the red zone. And, you know, even if he's not, he's kind of maybe like an inverse Julio Jones, so to speak, and where he might not do a whole lot for you 20-20, but in that red area, that is where he plays his best. And again, if they can figure out and get past the drops issue, I'm really encouraged by what you see from this wide receiver room and the talent that they have.
And, you know, Frazier looked like a guy that can be a star in this league. Again, I know much was said because it was big moments where the ball was on the ground. But as Connor Riley joins us from Dog Nation, the running backs, I mean, because you think of Georgia as, you know, tailback you. I mean, everybody claims it, but Georgia's been it. Can they be it again?
Yeah, I think Frazier has the ability to get there. You know, GA, it's not the best day for a running back, especially when it comes to running the ball because of just how much Georgia wants to throw the football there. But by all accounts, Nate Frazier has had a good spring. And I think similar to the drops issue, I think ball security can be a little bit of a mental issue there. And if Nate is able to get that cleaned up, he is as talented as any running back in the country. And we even saw that times a season ago where this is a kid that came in June, July, August, not really knowing a whole lot, and then leads Georgia in rushing in that game against Clemson. So he looks to become a more consistent player this year. The big question at running back is what do they have behind him? Because you know they're not going to give, you know, Nate Frazier 250, 300 carries like you used to see a long time ago. They're going to have to find other running backs in that room. Bo Walker, freshman, again, he's not the biggest guy. He's not the fastest guy, but he's just a really solid football player. He looked really good on Saturday. Second-year running back Chauncey Bowen's impressed a little bit. I like the young players in that room a little bit more coming out of G-Day than I did going into it. The big question is just can this group stay healthy, because that's been an issue at times, availability with the running back room in recent years.
What's your take on this Nico situation? And I don't think Georgia coaches were talking about it, maybe privately, but college football is certainly talking about it, Connor. Mike and I had a great conversation last hour about it as well. You can rewind on the Odyssey app and go listen. What do you think?
Everyone involved with this situation comes out worse for it. You know, I've seen today some national media types pushing, this is on the NCAA for not having guardrails and they're looking for a singular victim to blame. Everyone here is involved. Nico for trying to renegotiate this and do this at the 11th hour and trying to hold the Tennessee program hostage. I think he deserves blame for how this all turned out. Because this is a guy who started a playoff game last year for Tennessee and led them to more success than, quite frankly, they're accustomed to in recent years. I think this is on Tennessee for letting Nico believe that he was entitled to this. Again, remember, they gave him a four-year, $8 million contract before he had ever stepped foot on campus. I think they deserve some blame on this. Obviously, this is just the ecosystem that we live in college football right now. And there are a lot of calls for leadership. There are a lot of calls for someone to prevent things like this from happening again. This is just what college football is now. And Tennessee's worse off for it. I know from a Georgia perspective, if you're a Georgia fan, you're maybe thrilled about this news because that game on September 13th looks a lot less threatening now given the situation that Tennessee has at quarterback.
Right.
But I think the sport in general, like, this is just not a sustainable model where you have guys holding out and then eventually opting out of the program because they're not getting what they perceive to be their market value is. I think everyone involved, and this is such a college football story in this day and age, and Nico really, I think, is the poster child for what college football is these days. And if you're a fan of this sport and you're seeing something like this, I don't blame you one bit if this annoys you and turns you off.
Connor, we were saying earlier, and I've asked you this question before about how now Nick becomes, as he retires, Nick Saban, Kirby's now takes the mantle as the elder statesman of college, even though he was a young guy, and basically throwing stuff out there that maybe other coaches are going, yeah. And the fact that Dan Lanning, a former Georgia assistant, basically goes to Josh Heupel and says, hey, we're hearing that your quarterback is shopping his skills. So do you think, I'm not going to say collusion, but there would be a number of coaches that would link arms and say, yeah, enough of this nonsense, or try to find some way to maybe stop the tide.
I think that it is, that is ultimately what it is going to take, Mike, is unity from coaches, from players, from the schools, everyone coming together and say, hey, we're going to make sacrifices and we're going to do things that maybe aren't in the sole individual best efforts of our program or in our own best interest to better the sport of college football. And because for so long, this sport has always been, what can each of these schools do to gain the smallest of advantages that show up on Saturday? And so this is going to take a unified front. Like, I think it's a good thing for the SEC that they can't transfer within the conference during this April window. And Kirby was asked about that this weekend. Says, yeah, other schools love it, but I do think that that helps SEC teams because these kids so often want to go play in the best league, which in my opinion is still the SEC. And so it's going to take everyone getting on the same page, everyone willing to sacrifice a little bit off their plate in order for the betterment of the game and so that you don't find yourself in this situation. Because it happened to Tennessee this time, and I do believe some of this is Tennessee's own doing. But if you don't think that this can happen in your program, you just quite frankly haven't been paying attention.
That's what I said. It's not going to matter until all of a sudden your quarterback is asking for more, and it's going to at some point happen. By the way, Nico was, what, the eighth or ninth best quarterback in this conference? Look, I don't know how good Arch Manning is, okay, but he's going to be one of the top five quarterbacks. Lenore Sellers, we saw him at South Carolina. He's really good. You can talk about, you know, the kid at Vandy. What's it, Diego Pava, I believe it is. There are quarterbacks, Connor, what I'm saying, in this conference that I think are better than what Nico was going to be coming into this season, even though he had a chance to prove it. And I don't know if he's the seventh or eighth best quarterback in this conference. And by the way, Garrett Nussmeier may be the best quarterback in the conference at LSU. He might be.
Yeah, and I agree. And the dirty little secret about Nico is he was built and advertised as this program-changing prospect,
right.
Five-star quarterback.
Right.
He had five touchdown passes in the seven non-Vanderbilt SEC games for Tennessee last year.
Right.
He just did not look like that caliber of player. And this is a Tennessee offense that's supposed to allow for high explosive and big passing totals. So I think, again, this is just a symptom of where college football is these days. And, you know, Nico, he wasn't, in my opinion, a $4 million quarterback. And he has the right to seek that leverage, but he also has the right to go told to be kick rocks. And I think that's what happened here.
Carl mentioned Nussmeier real quick. I just think, you know, small sample size because he finally got on the field. But I think Lagway is going to be the best quarterback this year in the SEC. Would you buy that?
I'm selling DJ Lagway stock.
Ooh.
The injury news around him is really weird to me, where, you know, he misses two games last year because of a hamstring injury. He didn't throw at all this spring because of what appears to be a shoulder injury. And I worry about that going into the season. And look, that guy is as talented as there is. A lot of people really like him. I understand. And look, I'm willing to admit I could be very wrong about all this, but the health stuff around DJ Lagway right now is a little weird to me. And at least pulls me off of him a little bit.
Interesting. Yeah, I like the Austin Simmons kid out of Ole Miss. I think he's talented as anybody. Lane Kiffin turns these guys into pros. That's a guy that I think people are going to be sleeping on. We got plenty of time to talk about this, but we're talking about the rankings and where Nico fits in. And now he's not going to be in the SEC. It doesn't matter. But as always, Connor, great stuff on G-Day. And this thing continues, man. What a great offseason it's been so far, right? We got the draft coming up. What do you have coming out?
Yeah, plenty of stuff. Transfer portal opens on Wednesday. We expect Georgia to be active in there, looking for ways to fortify the roster. And before you know it, we'll be here in August, and we'll have a real game at Sanford Stadium to talk about.
No doubt. There he is from Dog Nation. Follow him, guys, on social media. Connor Riley, thanks so much.
Yep, thanks, guys.